Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. Okay, so this is the last Saturday night of the retreat, and retreat's over in a few days, and I know there's the inevitable kind of perceptions around end of retreat, you know, whether it's can't wait until it's over, or whether it's trepidation that it's going to be over. Yeah, those are just movements of the mind and dukkha either way. Or, you know, thinking in terms of how did I do on the retreat? Trying to gauge it, measure it, give oneself points, subtract points. It's, I mean, it's just sort of the way that the mind kind of constructs things, especially the you know, when we think in terms of, you know, how did I do? How did I do in the retreat? And almost invariably, what we do then is then compare ourselves to others, and that's a fruitless endeavor. That kind of comparing mind, because there isn't really, can't really make a comparison. You have to be able to pay attention to, well, what did I experience? What did I feel? What did I learn? And you know, there isn't really a tangible, concrete way that one can compare oneself to others in anything, really. It's usually a biased process. Either one's trying to compare oneself to others to be able to lift oneself up and put others down, or compare oneself to others in order to look at others and hold them aloft and then put oneself down. Yeah, and both of those are just, it's more complication, more suffering. And just learning how to be attentive and clear as to, well, what do I experience? What is my experience? It's like Ajahn Sumedho using the phrase, it's like this. Yeah, it's like this, whether we feel it's gone well, or whether we feel it was a total washout for the whole time. It's like this. Or like Ajahn Chah would say, cannot. it's nothing much. It's just this much. It's no big deal. You know, in the sense of, you know, if we felt we did, we're so great, it was such a great retreat. Cannot. It's just something that arises and ceases. And main thing is the, did we create any suffering around it, or are we going to continue to create suffering after it? And that's the measure that the Buddha gives us to be attentive to, and the machinations of the mind to try to make something out of ourselves or out of the world around us is just, it's just that much. Canon. Yeah, That's what I say, like the word samsara. Usually we think of it as a place. Samsara is the world. We think of it as a place. Of course, what the literal definition of the word samsara is just wandering on, and that tendency for the mind to wander on. It's just more reaction, more fear, more control, more irritation, more desire, more peace, more refinement, more insight. And it just is samsara, it's just wandering on. The mind always wanting something more, not content, not still, not relinquishing, not giving up, samsara. You know, to be able to recognize that tendency of the mind to move and wander, go on to the next thing, and then whether it's out of desire, fear, idealism, it's just more. And you know, it's just that much. But of course, just that much in samsara is a lot. Because it's like what the Buddha has said, what is more, the water in the oceans or the tears that you have shed while you have wandered on, while you have wandered through samsara. And of course the Buddha said, well, the tears that you've shed are more than in the ocean, enough to be tired of it, enough to be willing to be free from it, to not be buying into the things that keep us wandering on. And it doesn't matter whether it's a reaction to the coarse desires or refined opinions. It just keeps things moving. And as long as there's that wandering on in the mind, that attachment to samsara, then of course we keep suffering. And the Buddha gives us the skills, the tools to allow us to be free from that, and to be able to, in particular in context of the retreat, to be able to take the experiences that we have had during this retreat and to plow them back into our understanding, our discernment, our clarity, and our kind of stability, our firmness. That tendency to be shaken and moved by the things that we experience, it's that endless experience of samsara, endless experience of dukkha, and to be able to be attentive to that. It's the opportunity that we have at all times, really. Of course, it's not about it's not just about retreat, but this is, we're in retreat. We've had time to really practice, to reflect, to investigate, and to develop a familiarity and a comfort with just sitting still. And by sitting still, I don't mean just sort of sitting in meditation posture with one's back upright. Oh, well, which is a good start, and I recommend that to restlessly moving over or slumping all the time. But that, but the actual sitting in terms of the being attentive to that stillness mind, the stillness of heart, recognizing the habit of mind, the force of the mind, being pulled to desire, or to fear, or to aversion, and how to encourage it toward relinquishment, toward compassion, to a sense of stability and ease with whatever arises. Because just using that phrase of, you know, whatever arises, whatever we come into contact with, it's only that much. We love the stories, we love the kind of drama sometimes of, because sometimes it's like, you know, sitting still, I mean, because we're always looking for something. You know, the mind loves to get worked up about things, especially if it's about ourselves. You know, that's one of the most compelling stories. Me and my life. But just the way that the mind loves to story, the mind with fear. We love to worry about things. We've become fearful of different things, and it's like statistically. We're far more likely to be injured moving furniture than we are to be injured in a terrorist attack. But in terms of people living in the world and thinking about all the things that are going wrong in the world, that's the latest sort of monster under the bed, there's a terrorist attack. Or we're much more likely to die of the flu than, say, of Ebola or something, some thing that's in the news. Mm-hmm. By huge proportions of statistically, you're far more likely to die from the flu than some sort of the things that are go through the news that people get excited about and fearful about and grab the headlines. And that's the way our mind works. The stories, we get excited about them. And so just looking at the way that they... Because again, that's part of that samsara, that wandering on, that push, that draw to something else. Something other than being content and clear and stable and free in this present moment. So to recognize that we have the opportunity to exercise different choices for ourselves with wisdom and discernment, to be able to take an interest in that. Because the nature of the mind is such that so much of what we, well, not so much, everything that we experience in the mind or the citta, the heart, isn't actually solid. It doesn't have that much solidity. It doesn't have a concrete existence. You know, what we experience are impressions, perceptions, conjectures, extrapolations from experience. That's how the mind works. But the mind then concretizes it and makes it into something. It's like when, we can carry around people in our minds. So and so is like this, and so and so should be like this. So and so shouldn't be like this. But so-and-so is just a kind of projection. It doesn't have a solid reality in our mind. We don't have real people in our minds. But that's what we project them out. We don't have real things in our mind. What we experience are, say, colors, sensations, it's built up through memory and association. And then we impute that kind of solidity to it. And we make a world for ourselves that's either, you know, is either fearful or is unstable or is that we chase after with our desires. But it's, you know, we're doing that. And it's important to recognize that it doesn't have the solidity that we think. It's like these nights. It's the moon is coming out. Skies are clear. If we had any water here, which we don't, living on the mountain, but if we had, if there was a pond here. And it's like nighttime, just like now, the moon is out. And we saw the moon on the water. It'd be really very clear. And you'd say, wow. It's like you could just, there, the moon would be there, and you could just reach out and touch it. Of course, if you did reach out and touch it, what would happen? Your hand would just go into the water. It's just a reflection. But it looks real. And that's so much of what we experience is just has that same solidity. You know, we think back at our memories of what we felt, how we perceived, and we create a solidity there. With like thinking back at some of the memories of when we were younger, and you know we get, you know, we still carry. Either, you know, some kind of, you know, think of something that we did that was really embarrassing, and you see, you can, it invokes that same feeling, and it's, you know, that could be, well, it depends how old you are. In my case, it could be decades ago, we invest in it, and we make assumptions. And that's not not lobbying for people to just say it's all unreal and it's you don't have to take responsibility for it. But it's, you know, get it in perspective. It's just that much. And learning how to understand the true nature of things, so we don't have to create that extra edge of suffering that. We're so adept at creating, pay attention to you know what is it that is, yeah, what's useful, what's true. So that this the training that we've done, the practice, the meditation, you know, learning how to take that into our daily life. Mm-hmm. It won't be that long and the retreat will be over. Some people, the monastics, there'll be some moving on. Tenpo Muta will be off to Temple, New Hampshire, new monastery there. Not too long, Tantitapanyo will be off to Harnam. The retreat crew will be slowly be heading off in different directions. The rest of us will be here. And things will change for all of us. But how do we maintain a steadiness and clarity whereby we're not creating suffering? That's the point of the practice. And just learning how to take out of experience the things that are useful, fruitful, beneficial. And learning how to keep what's useful, learning how to let go of what isn't. It's like if you're camping or you know, whatever. whatever. You mean you're taking water from a stream, filtering it, boiling it, making it drinkable. You're taking something that is, it has to be filtered. It has to be purified. It has to be made clean. And our minds are exactly the same. And, it doesn't really matter how dirty, polluted, turbid water will be, or could be, you can still clean it. You can still filter it. You can still purify it. And so that the mind is exactly the same. Learning how to draw out, it's sort of like the peace, whatever peace we experience, it comes out of a kind of a confused, agitated mind. It's just as you learn how to work with it. The experience of non-self, of anatta, comes out of the experience of self. We start from where we are. Well, we have to start from where we are. There isn't any other place to start. But to recognize that, that's what the purpose of the practice is. That's the tools that the Buddha gave us. Learning how to use them, learning how to apply them. And, we don't have to get fancy. It's like the Ajahn Kurundamo's talk last night, working with the hindrances. There's always that's a fundamental perspective and reflection and skill that we have to cultivate. How do we free the heart from the hindrances? What do we use for reflection? It's just anicca, dukkha, anatta. You don't have to go far. You don't have to get fancy. Impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, non-self. Those are actually the essence of what the liberating insight that the Buddha is giving us. And it's on a certain level, it's just so ordinary, so normal, so commonplace in the Buddha's teachings that we tend to either overlook it or tend to think, surely it can't be, that's all there is to it. It must be more to it than this. But that's really the essence, is being able to see things from that perspective of impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, not self. That's where the Buddha saying, whether a Buddha arises in the world or doesn't arise in the world, all compounded things are impermanent. Whether there's a Buddha pointing out or a Buddha not pointing it out, all compounded things are dukkha, they're unsatisfactory, they're stressful. And whether the Buddha, whether the Buddha or whether the Tathagata arises in the world or doesn't, all things are not self. This is a fundamental truth of whether it's pointed out or not. That's how things are. And to be able to direct our attention to that in a way that allows us to not get entangled either in our own minds, the world around us, the assumptions that we assume for ourselves, assumptions that the world gives, imputes on us, seeing things in their true nature. And not just sort of trying to slap a label of, it's all impermanent, unsatisfactory, non-self. How does it feel? What's the experience? What are the nuances of that? What's it really mean? How does it affect us? You can slap a label on anything, but that doesn't make it. It's like taking sand and get this nice white sand and call it salt. You can slap the label salt on it, but Yeah, it tastes different when you put it on food. Mm-hmm. It's just not, it's always going to be sand. It's not going to taste salty. So that same with, you know, it's like anicca dukkha anatta. You just don't perfunctorily put the label on, or don't just do it out of. You have to investigate. You have to look closely. You have to pay attention to what it feels like. What's it? What's the experience? How does it affect the heart and whatever? You know, look at it more and more deeply. And then the heart really changes. As I got Jen Cha saying that, you know, when we really see anicca dukkha anatta, when we really see that impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, not self, quality to things, it's like having a spring. A wellspring and water, where you have an endless supply of water. And it says, whereas if we don't see it, we don't really understand it, and you get glimpses of it now and again, so you're just having a bottle of water. A bottle of water runs out pretty quick. But that seeing things in their true nature, seeing things in a deep way, you know, wherever we go, and we're never short. We're not really missing anything. We have something to sustain us all the time. So that's redirecting our attention back to the roots of practice, roots of reflection, investigation, the roots of contemplation, what do we pay attention to? And quality, yoni so manasikara, that wise attention. How do we attend to things? And just to encourage people to reflect and take the things that we've learned from this retreat and carry it with you. And things will change. The retreat will come to an end in a few days. But that doesn't. Our practice doesn't end. We have to keep practicing. We have to keep reflecting. We have to keep trying to understand. Where's the roots of our peace, of our stability, of our freedom. Learn how to nurture that. So it's the Saturday night, day after the lunar observance night. There's no need to go on for too long. Everybody's tired. I'll end it there. Sadhu Karangadamase.